Welcome to Metaphysical Straight Talk from the Heart. I'm Atira, your host. And today we're going to have an exciting adventure. I'm so excited. I have an incredible person, Pamela Evans from Ontario, Canada, that we're going to talk to today. She has an extensive background in fashion illustration, 27 years in editing, columnist, and copywriter for local newspapers and magazines. And in 2005, she put her skills to work to write a fabulous book called Dead As She'll Ever Be, As I'll Ever Be. And it's an amazing book, and I think you're going to enjoy our adventure tonight. But before I even bring her to the playing field here, I want to state a quote from a recent review that she got by a Michael Timmons. And it's a great way to segue her in because it's so interesting. It says, she states that she wrestled the subject of life after death to the ground and concluded that death was final, period. There are so many of us have wrestled with that life after death question. Pamela, welcome to my show.
Thank you, Atira. It's wonderful to be here.
I love your book. It is so such an amazing journey because it really is an adventure on how you went from a right brain columnist and, you know, person that writes for newspapers to an adventure in spirituality, in metaphysics, and psychics, and reincarnation.
Well, it happened in 30 minutes. 25 years ago, I sat down in front of a little German lady for my first psychic reading. I'd been talked into it during lunch, and I had no intention of taking it seriously because I was far too intelligent, I thought.
So you were kind of a drag-long, huh?
Oh, I was there to be entertained. And 30 minutes later, this woman was German, and she didn't speak English. And her Walter Matthau lookalike husband sat between us and translated. And she held my hands and told me stuff I couldn't get over. And 30 minutes later, I just stood up thunderstruck. And I honestly have never been the same since. You're probably wondering what she told me. That the three main things that she enlightened me about where basically she relieved 40 years of guilt about my mother, who was an alcoholic, by telling me it was not my fault. Now, this woman I had only known for 10 minutes when this came out, and she was from Berlin. And she hadn't been in London that long, didn't know anything about my family. The appointment had been made an hour before I got there. And the second thing is she explained I'd been a spiritual teacher in past lives. I had never known anything about reincarnation. But the odd thing was, even though I was an agnostic at that moment, I knew she was right. It just felt right. And then by telling me that, she introduced me to the concept of reincarnation, which I've subsequently discovered, of course, is the most important thing anybody can ever learn in any lifetime. So from that day forward, I've been reading my little eyes out and going. I've been to over 60 psychics, not because I need a fix, but because it was part of my investigation. Because I sensed right away, that day I sensed the potential of what psychics could do to help us. And so my objective in this lifetime is to restore good mediums and psychics to their proper place in society, where they have not been since 325 AD, and that's another story I'll be glad to tell you about. And I'm also here to restore reincarnation teachings in all the schools because it is such an important concept to understand because it refines the way we live when we understand that everything we do comes back to us.
Yeah, for every action, there's a reaction.
That's right. Now, I can go on. You just tell me when to stop.
Well, what I want to say first is, though, you were living in England when this first reading happened, correct?
No, London, London, Ontario.
Oh, in London, Ontario. Okay, we got to make sure we get all our places correct.
Right.
So, yeah, so I think it's very fascinating to me that, first of all, you go to someone who speaks in a different language.
Right.
And then tells you something to your, you know, that no one could know. Because obviously she couldn't do much research on the internet.
Exactly.
And so I think people are always startled when they come to a medium or a reader and those profound things happen, much less in a foreign language.
Oh, it was just absolutely stunning. And of course I was very open among all my social acquaintances who all rolled their eyes and thought I was crazy. But what I learned from being open about all this is what questions they have about this, which then help me in turn teach down the line. So I feel that I can answer the questions almost before they're asked, because the same questions come up time and time again.
Well, when you had this first experience, did you really even think you were psychic? Did you, you know, did you have very much belief system even in this at all?
No, I didn't. What I was told and what I feel I'm here for in this lifetime is to teach. The psychic that day, whose name was Mary, explained that I was here to teach the masses. And the odd thing is, of all the 40-some-odd part-time and full-time jobs I've had in my life, it was the teaching jobs or the selling jobs that I really enjoyed. And I see where there's a terrific need, because good psychics are appearing more and more often, and I can't do that. But, boy, I have learned because I've done so much research, and I've talked to so many people, and I've taught so many classes, that I really think I can help people at all levels of spiritual understanding, as well as all ages, to be introduced to these concepts. Now, my 13-year-old granddaughter just had her first reading from a medium.
Oh, I think it's great they're starting young.
Oh, yeah. It was just wonderful. It was what she needed. She's going through troubled times, and she came out of there flying.
That's
and I
great.
Said to her, Paris, do you have a better sense of yourself? And she said, oh, Grandma, it was fabulous.
Well, one thing I loved about your book is that it covers so much diversity in the metaphysical studies. You know, I mean, you talk to a lot of mediums, you go to seances. I mean, you just kind of did some of everything, you know. You connected to past life readings, you went to seances and experienced apports and apparitions. And then you got into karma and reincarnation, and you got interested in Edgar Cayce, the sleeping prophet. That's one of my favorite ones, because, of course, when I was in my 20s trying to understand what I came in with, that was the first book I read that made me think, oh, my God, I'm not alone.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah.
I read all his books first. I started right that same week I had my first reading, and I haven't looked back since. But the thing that I have found too over the last 25 years is I've tried all the New Age stuff because I wanted to sort out what I thought was important. And my two important things, the three important things, are the restoring of the mediums to their proper place in society, and reincarnation teachings, and also to explain to the people, North Americans particularly, the hidden history behind mediums and religion. And it's quite spectacular.
Well, I think the Da Vinci Code kind of started touching on some of that.
Well, it did, and I just love that book. Every week it's on the top of the list, I think.
For a reason. I think one of the best parts of it is really provoked people to start really questioning religion, questioning, you know, when we see history, we don't see the part religion played in history, in our history books, unfortunately. And we should, because a lot of history is made because of religions.
Oh, absolutely. Like 80% of the wars, for starters.
And I think a lot of people have this big question about, you know, Da Vinci Code being, you know, fictitious and that. But I have to say, if you read Arthur Finley, you know,
I do.
Finley's work, a wonderful, has written On the Edge of Etheric and many, many other books. He's an author, a man from England. He's passed, of course, and he wrote in the late, and I think actually 1950-something was the last time.
He died in 63 or something.
Yeah, something like that. Anyway, he wrote several books, but he was a master researcher on religion and its part it's played in all of this stuff and what has been taken out and I mean, it's authentic. I mean, he's really, really researched and can back it up with documents from church. So I really encourage our listeners to check out his works, as well as the Da Vinci Code, because I think a lot of the Da Vinci Code probably was based on some of that studies.
Oh, definitely. I had read the Dan Brown source book, The Holy Blood and the Holy Grail, 20 years ago. And what's interesting about that, naturally, even in my book club, there are scoffers about the Da Vinci Code. And I said, listen, before you criticize the Da Vinci Code, and sure, it's fiction, the author was very smart about that because more people read it that way.
That's true.
But I said, go back to his source. His main source was this Holy Blood and Holy Grail. And the church had 45th when it came out, but they could not sue the publishing company.
Mm-hmm.
they couldn't sue it because they got the authors of that book had the documents to back up what they were saying. And the church knew damn well it was true.
Yeah.
And I love that.
I find it really interesting, too. If you read into spiritualism and you read in Finley's work especially, he talks about that there's actually a department in the Church of England that studies phenomena and studies this stuff. And actually, you know, was asked to review spiritualism years and years ago.
That's
and
right.
Really could not debunk it. And the report was really never, ever published,
unfortunately. It was buried.
As so many things are.
Yes, along with the 24 books in the Bible that were removed back in 325.
Someday we'll find those archives.
That's right.
So what would you define the word religion as for you?
Well, religion, and most North Americans don't know this, the word religion comes from the Latin word re, meaning again, and ligare, meaning to tie or bind. Therefore, the original word meant the reconnection of those in spirit through a gifted medium with those on earth. And the purpose of this was to bring insight and guidance and comfort to the tribes that there was life after death, because they were all illiterate back, you know, hundreds of thousands of years ago. So what happened, and that was called ancestor worship. So then it evolved over the next bunch of centuries. Well, first of all, that is how all religions started, with a tribal group where one person happened to be a medium in the group, and there's usually one, because people in those days were more attuned to nature than we are now, because we're also materialistic.
Yeah, but, no video games, TV, and
that's right. So, therefore, all religions were started by mediums. But over the centuries, and people call these apparitions gods, and all the great advanced cultures all had special names for their gods, you know, Zeus, Apollo, and on and on and on. And they were the pagan religions, and they surrounded very advanced civilizations. But then, and even the first couple of years after Jesus died, they still used mediums in the followers of Yeshua used mediums. But in 325, when Constantine made Christianity the state religion, he put the might of the empire, along with the ecclesiastics, into full swing. And that's when they concocted the, if you'll pardon the expression, fraudulent creeds and dogmas that they still teach today. And from that day forward, they closed every school, every university, every library, and every hospital in the entire Roman Empire.
It
for
was really
1,500
interesting.
Years.
Yeah, it's really interesting because it was really a control.
Oh, definitely. Well, you see, all religions, and I don't mean to just pick on one, but Christianity did something just a little over and above the others. All religions have closed men's minds, divided and conquered, and subjected women. Now, that's evident.
Well,
however, Christianity stopped all knowledge for 1,500 years, and that was called the Dark Ages.
Yes, sir, it was very dark. And, you know, it's true because people in particular, when I do what I do on radio interviews, they'll call in and a lot of Christians will say, you know, well, do you believe in God and different things? And what religion are you? And I always say to them, you know, I'm the same religion as God.
Yes.
God is not a religion.
That's exactly what I say.
It's true.
And, you know, President Lincoln once said, if they ever developed a religion whose only creed was the golden rule, he would join. I'm with him.
It's true. Because religion is really usually controlling and fit in the box in some form, any religion that I've ever
absolutely
looked into. And I really think that that's one thing that I do see evolving now is people going in search of and being more open-minded and questioning. I think that's why your book is so fabulous. It just blows open the door for people to go in search of and question, just like Shirley MacLaine going out on that limb saying, bless
right.
her little heart.
Well, yeah, exactly. She broke the ice for all of us.
She sure did.
I nobody's perfect when they start teaching, and I just thought she did a great job and took the heat for it.
True.
And I thank her in the front of my book, as a matter of fact, for helping getting things going. Did you want me to go on about religion?
Sure.
Or that?
Well, what I really actually wanted to know kind of is, in your book, you talk about the importance of reincarnation, and I think that's an important subject to kind of discuss.
Oh, absolutely, because understanding reincarnation can change not only your own personal life, but it can change all kinds of things in society. And it could change the whole world, because if everybody in the world believed in reincarnation, we would all feel responsible for our actions. And what I can say is that reincarnation affects every aspect of our life. Do you want me to define it?
I would like you to define it in this way, because a lot of people think of it as an Eastern thing.
Exactly.
You know,
okay.
And I think it gets very confused, so I'd love to hear your version of it.
Okay. Reincarnation is, this is simply stated, is the concept that our pre-existent souls move into physical bodies, a series of them, lifetime after lifetime, in order to learn lessons in the physical plane. Because there are certain lessons we can only learn on this planet that we can't learn in other realms. When we have become perfect, and our soul's goal is inherently to become perfect, by that I mean totally loving and compassionate, unconditional love is the goal, then we can decide that we no longer have to come back into the physical body. Now, it goes hand in hand with the law of karma. And the law of karma is the law of cause and effect. It's just the same as the physical law of motion, which states that for every action, there's an equal opposite reaction. So in other words, karma cannot exist without reincarnation and vice versa. So karma is not a punishing law or judgmental in any way. It is divine balance. As we sow, so we reap. And the famous Jewish teacher Hillel said, and I love this statement, the universe always settles the score.
That is so true.
Yes, but I just love that statement. And some people, the listeners may not know that until 200 years ago, Judaism taught reincarnation. And reincarnation is in all the holy books of Islam, Judaism, and Christianity. I have the quotes are on my website at deadasilleverbe.com. I have all the Bible quotes that pertain to reincarnation, if anybody happens to be interested. Now, the thing is, it applies to every part of our life. For instance, we choose our parents, and we choose how we're born and how we die for the lessons that are necessary. We come back in families and in groups of friends to, not necessarily settle scores, but to work things out in some cases. And when we get married, it's the same sort of thing. We all think we're going to be happy when we're married. Not necessarily. There are a few really happy marriages because everything's been worked out in previous lives. It's not.
I want to mention that too. I really think it's important to know that karma is not always bad stuff you have to fix and finish too.
No, karma's good stuff too.
We get good stuff.
Right. For instance, Mozart had worked on his piano lessons very hard in previous lives, obviously, and when he came through, he picked up music at age 3. We have all kinds of examples of child prodigies, and that's. And in my case, I was sort of a spiritual prodigy in the sense that at age 4, I was fascinated with my grandmother's religion, which was actually a bit of a cult at the time. I don't think it is today, but it was. I can remember asking her what those purple spiritual pictures were on the wall, and from then on, she gave me stuff to read, and I started paying attention to my family's various religions.
What was her religion?
Her religion was called the I Am.
Oh, interesting.
Now, I think Elizabeth Clare Prophet, I meant to ask you about this privately, all her material was purple. Records were purple, pictures of the ascended masters were purple, and did I say the vinyl records were purple as well? And I used to drive her to New York to special classes with this thing when I was 16, obviously. And then my grandfather was Christian Scientist.
Well, that's
then
an interesting combination. That's a really great background.
Background.
But still didn't push you over the edge to being a firm believer.
No, here's what it did. There were eight of my Catholics cousins were Catholic. Then the rest were sort of Anglican, variations of Anglicanism. But there were 3 people in our family that had no religion at all. And the one thing I learned and remembered when I was writing the book was how calm and peaceful they seemed to be about life in general, and very wise. And now I understand it's because they are old. They were old souls. By old souls, I mean they had done Earth a lot. They had outgrown restrictive religions. You see, we all need religions as young souls, just like babies need playpens and rules. And then as we evolve over the many lifetimes, we are able to, we have the wisdom to make decisions, and we don't have to go to church every week to be told to be a good girl or a good boy.
I think that's what we're seeing in the world today, is people have outgrown the box, and that we are
definitely now the fundamentalist,
to the God within us.
That's right. The fundamentalists that we see that are pretty provocative, they are young souls, actually even baby souls, black's black and white's white, and often very rigid priests and nuns are at that baby soul level. But by and by, as Walt Whitman says, we will all outgrow organized religion. Now, when I say religion, I'm talking about the clubs that have formed, you know, ever since once the civilization started, but particularly once Christianity got underway and Judaism and Islam. Those are all separate clubs. And the trouble is, there's a certain amount of elitism in each of these clubs, like we are the chosen people. Jesus is the only way to God. Allah is the only way to God. That is war. That causes wars, and it certainly has.
It's amazing how many wars have been fought in the name of a God.
Oh, yes.
It's unreal.
Over 80%, as Arthur Findlay says.
And it's amazing to me, you know, that it's such a control, that man is so controlling. Man is so much an ego. And instead of really understanding that, you get a lot more if you just love somebody.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, just to talk about a couple of things in connection with reincarnation. The understanding of reincarnation makes you realize that, for instance, when it comes to homosexuality, we choose the sex each time we come in that we want to be. And part of our life experience on this planet is to be a homosexual for the lessons that we learn. And Edgar Cayce explains that sometimes a person may have been a male, or say a female in many past lives, has decided to make the transition to the other sex and still has the attractions that they had in the previous lifetime. And that is just sort of how that can come to be. That's why often homosexual males are so nurturing. And just some non-homosexual males are so nurturing because they've had that experience of nurturing in past lives. It's a wonderful thing, yeah. And Shakespeare said it, and I cannot think of the quote, but something about the elements are so mixed in him that he was a real man. There's a
right.
Wonderful
balance,
statement.
The real balance, yeah.
Exactly.
What's your take on reincarnation and abortion?
Oh, abortion is neither good nor bad. It's a choice. And there are three kinds of information that from which we can understand that the soul does not join the fetus until just around the time of birth. First of all, through hypnotic regression. The late Dr. Helen Wambach held huge group regressions. And one of the questions they were asked, which they answered after they woke up, was, when were you aware that your consciousness joined your body? And 95% of them said around the time of birth. Then there are Edgar Cayce's teachings, and he says the same thing, exactly. And then in Carol Bowman's book, which she has written two books, one, Return from Heaven, and the first one, I think, was Children's Past Lives, a great researcher who helps heal children from helping them see past lives. But as she said, there's a statement of a young child that she talks about in her book, who said to her mommy one day, "Mommy, I came to you and Daddy before you were married, but you couldn't have me then, so then I had to go back and wait till you could have me."
I find that really interesting because in my work, you know, often when people are dealing, I mean, they carry tremendous guilt over their abortions, and often the spirit will say to me that they weren't ready, and they started down the chute, so to speak, and said, "Oh my gosh, I'm not ready. And
right.
So it was a soul agreement between the mother and the baby to not do it.
That's right.
Neither of them were ready.
And sometimes,
so, therefore, to put the guilt aside.
Oh, no guilt at all. This is what I'm trying to explain. And sometimes there's a Sid's death, which is simply a soul that changed its mind after it was born. That's why they can't find any physical symptoms about it.
Because our consciousness continues. You know, people think when you look at a little baby, you think, and they can't communicate, you know, here's this, you know, innocent thing. But, you know, that's a 30,000-year-old soul looking back at you often.
That's right.
And they just can't spit it out. They can't communicate. But they, you know, they have awareness. And I think sometimes we forget that.
Oh,
you know,
sure
that
we
they
do.
They still have a soul connection, a spark of God in them, and they can decide to go home whenever they want.
Absolutely. Our souls
that
are pure energy. Yep. Well, you cannot destroy energy, and that's what our souls are, is pure energy. But Elizabeth Kubler Ross makes a lovely statement. She interviewed
I love
you.
Her work.
I do, too. She stated her view based on her years of research, and she said, this is about abortion, would a soul which is of God even think of entering a fetus when it knew it would be swept away?
Right.
Isn't that neat?
It is true. It's true.
Yeah.
And the soul, I mean, you know, if I really find as I can't remember who said this, they didn't find any more amazing to be reborn than to be born the first time.
Yeah, that was Voltaire.
Yeah, because it's so amazing. It is, you know,
oh,
that we can
well,
know,
it is.
Come into this realm and have a little, really, an almost nothing piece of air and become this baby and grow up and have all these life experiences and then take it with us.
Exactly. I just want to tell you a story about for those who are caring for somebody mentally ill. This is in connection with reincarnation. My mother had Alzheimer's disease and didn't know me for the last 4 years of her life. 9 months after she died, I went to a seance, and she came through in that seance. And her statement was, this was a very private seance with six of us, and I wasn't feeling well. I wasn't even paying attention. And all of a sudden, the medium said, this is a message from Noni, that was my mother, for Pam, me. And my mother said, now aren't you glad you waited for the money? Now, this was a woman who couldn't speak or recognize me for 4 years. She came through clear as a bell, and that statement was like a mantra that she had given me for 10 years from the time until I left home.
Wow.
We would have discussions about money, and she would always say, now, you'll be glad you waited for the money. Now, I heard this once a month for 10 years. That was the statement that came through.
It's interesting when I give readings for people who are dealing with dementia or Alzheimer's or coma, either any of the above, and it's that the soul is often more on the other side than here. Like sometimes they're in, you know, beyond the veil and checking things out, getting ready to go. It's a very interesting dichotomy. They just haven't snipped the silver cord.
Yeah.
You know, and so they're, I mean, they hear everything you say. You got to watch what you say.
Oh, absolutely.
You know. And
now, the other thing, too, is that when you understand that we will all be race, all of us will be every race and religion, it breeds tolerance. And I hate using the word tolerance because it sounds like there's something wrong. But it breeds a fellowship when we understand we are all going to be in the other guy's shoes if we haven't already been there. And that's a nice feeling.
Well, I think it would unite the world. It would really unite the world.
It really
we
would.
We really got that, you know, the whole thing, there but by the grace of God go I.
That's right. And then there are five things in society that it really does, that understanding reincarnation helps with. And one of them is capital punishment. We are better to leave. We must not, we have no right to take anybody's life unless it's in self-defense. Better leave it to the divine law of balance to look after it. And it will be, as Hillel says, the universe will always settle that score. So whatever that person has done, they will suffer themselves down the line. But also as far as genetic meddling is concerned, genetic meddling is neither good nor bad. For instance, in vitro stem cell research is not bad at all because it helps people here on Earth. And if, say, in the case of cloning, which is a bit extreme, there's really no problem with that either because the soul will only join that cloned body if it wants to. Like, nobody can force a soul into a body.
Right. I think actually everyone forgets there's this main thing, and that is everything's a conscious choice.
That's right.
Everything we do is a conscious choice, and people get so on autopilot in this world. And they forget, you know, they get up and they want to blame their boss, their husbands, or whatever,
that's
you know,
right.
Their exes, or whatever,
that's
for,
right.
Or their parents for rotten life. And the truth is, I have seen people in the same situation, in the same family, you know, three of them come out just fine, and the fourth one is all messed up and wants to blame it all on the parents. And they had the same parents. But it's the soul of evolution and our conscious choice. I can choose to be angry at someone or not.
And he also chose
the
parents.
Things. Absolutely. Even though I chose those parents, maybe I came to help them make a different choice.
That's right.
I can't be mad at them if they couldn't.
That's right. Well, the last thing I wanted to mention was is the business of organ donation. Mm-hmm. I don't know what the situation is in the States, but in Canada, we are desperate for more organs.
Mm-hmm.
And when you understand reincarnation, you understand that it's almost immoral not to donate your organs because they're just your old clothes. And once your soul leaves, it has no further use for them.
I've had so many experiences with people who have donated their organs and had absolutely the most amazing stories come back to me. You know,
really?
Somebody got sight and everything. Yeah, it's amazing to me that it's just that we don't do it because it's just once that soul has left that body, and you will always grieve that person. Person can give life to 10 people.
That's right.
It's amazing stories, amazing.
And it all comes from getting rid of the ignorance about reincarnation. Once you have the knowledge, then you have the power to make wiser decisions in life. And one of the other things is that suicides might decrease when people understand you can't escape anything. Might as well deal with the problem now and get it over with so you don't have to go through it next time.
Yeah, I want to talk about that because I see so many people. I mean, suicide affects so many people. I had a dear friend whose husband got a debilitating disease and he killed himself and he had 4 kids.
I can't hear you very well.
Oh, and it really tore up the whole family, this suicide. And they were all worried about, you know, he's going to hell. And the truth is, he's not going to hell. He's going to the cosmic hospital.
That's right.
To a place, a dimension, where he recreates his home, and he works through what he didn't work through here.
That's right. That's right.
You know, so
the other thing is, too, the people always ask me about Hitler.
I know. I love this question. Go for it.
Well, I just always say he'll go to be with like-minded souls.
Right.
So he'll get his. Don't worry.
And I tell developing mediums, I think it's very important to say this at this point since you brought that up, is, you know, energy cannot be destroyed. It just changes form.
That's right.
If Gandhi is on the other side, Hitler's on the other side too, guys.
That's right.
And so if you're dialing 1-800, I want to talk to a spirit, make sure who you're calling.
Yeah, that's right.
You know, it's true because people forget and they get excited when they get into metaphysics and they want to, you know, have their seance or, you know, experiences. And you have to set intent and do some things. I think it's important not to just
dial
anybody.
That's why, well, I'm sure you've warned all your clients about playing with a Ouija board.
I know. It's not a game, guys.
Not a game. It's dangerous.
It's
people have even researchers have gone mad playing with a Ouija board.
Well, I also think that it's just that, you know, unfortunately, this is not, it's a science. It is a science. And unfortunately, people want to make it a game or a hobby or, you know, something that they're going to dabble in, and it's not. It's a serious profession. It's a serious thing. Spirits are real, and if you want to attract the right kind of spirits, you need to. That's why they call alcohol spirits. You go into a place where you see someone drinking, and you don't see a lot of happy people usually.
That's right.
You know, maybe the 21-year-old that's just having their first drink, but really, people who consume a lot of alcohol open themselves, and if a person's had an addiction on this side, they may not have quite given it up on the other side.
That's
so
right.
They'll be attracted to that. So please, please, everyone out there, do your homework. Don't just go and try something. It's important. It's like any profession. You have to lay the foundation and the ground rules.
Well, exactly. And I explain, and I hope you'll support me on this, that there's also a level of in the spirit world that have not evolved. They've not taken the usual post-mortal route. They haven't followed the light. And they're kind of hanging around because they have an attachment to the physical world. And the minute somebody sits down at a Ouija board, it's like a beacon goes up. Come on in.
Yeah, I think it's really very much like that. I do think that there are people who are still attached. That's why we have hauntings, that people are still attached to their place or whatever, or violence that happened to them. But some entities get stuck. And certainly when you look like the 100-watt bulb on a 25-watt world, let's go down there and check it out. You know, somebody's got the open sign on.
That's right.
They show up, yeah. Sometimes to communicate, sometimes not to cause problems, but they're just trying to get through. But other times, certainly, you know, they've got an agenda. And I really tell anybody who's doing this and doing seances or table tipping or any of the things that open you to spirit, do not use drug or alcohol before you do this. Use white light. lay the foundation, set intent, ask your angel guides and masters to be with you, and don't play it. It's not a game.
No, that's for sure.
I want to talk about the crystal skull.
Oh, marvelous.
I am so excited when I saw this because I had this incredible thing happen to me years ago when I was in Egypt. I had a vision when I was in Egypt, and I had never heard of a crystal skull in my life. I had the corner of my room fell away, and there was a vision of these people in a circle, and there was a skull in the center of this purple light coming down and radiating out from all of these people. And as that light hit that human skull, and eventually it became crystallized into a crystal skull.
Oh.
And I wrote it down. I came out of the vision, and I wrote it down as fast as I could because it was so, it just happened. And I came home and I called a friend and I said, "You're going to think I'm nuts, but I got to talk to you about this." And I told him what happened. And he goes, "Oh, yeah, there's crystal skulls." And I said, "You're kidding me."
Well, I went to a seminar, which I explained in my book. And I had never heard, a friend told me about the seminar. I went and I just locked in, although there's no such thing as coincidence, to be able to see the most beautiful of all the crystal skulls ever found.
It is the oldest, too. Mitchell Hedges crystal
skull. Yeah, Mitchell Hedges, yeah. And Anna Mitchell Hedges was there.
Oh, my God, I'm jealous.
Oh, well, wait till I tell you what happened. So I'm fairly new at this whole metaphysical game, and I'm all dressed up in a suit because I don't want any New Age types approaching me just yet. Let's find out what I'm doing. And I sit next to a woman who meditates with a crystal through the whole seminar. But the interesting thing is, the skull, first of all, we all had to get up and clear the room after we'd all sat down because Anna Mitchell Hedges was very twitchy about the
insurance arrangement. Absolutely.
So and out we had to go. And back in again. And then we were all, then we had the lecture about the skull, which is in, the lecture's in my book. It's not very long, just some interesting details. It was found in, near Belize. In 1924, and they feel that it came from Atlantis for sure. And at the time of that seminar, we were told that it had been carbon dated to be 26,000 years old. Mm-hmm. Now, since then, the books I've read, it's about 3,500 years old. I could believe it either way. But interesting thing is that it had been sent to all of great labs around the world, and nobody could figure out how it was made. It was there sitting on black velvet, sort of dark and mysterious, in a plexiglass container. And we all were allowed to go up and have a look. And what is fascinating about this thing is that occasionally it would cloud over. We didn't see it do this, but it was explained to us that it would cloud over and then clear up. And then sometimes there are sort of auric lights that flicker out from it, and other times sounds that come and go. And they feel it's some sort of computer from Atlantis.
I think that they're fascinating. After I had the experience of that vision, a few months later, I actually tried to find a book on Mitchell Hedges, actually. And it was one of those synchronicities. Book fell out at a bookstore, and there it was, and I read it.
Mm-hmm.
And my friend said, "Oh, you should see. There's one called Max the Crystal Skull in Texas. And, you can read this." I read an article on it that he had. And I said, "Oh, my gosh, I have to manifest it coming up here or going down there." Joking. I was joking.
Yeah.
And 3 weeks later, Max the Crystal Skull was here in Seattle.
Oh, for goodness.
And I wanted to go, and they had no more openings. And I told the lady this story, and I said, "Oh, well, I really want to go." And it was very spooky. She called me back about an hour later and says, "Guess what? Evening Magazine wants to interview somebody about coming to see Max. You want to do the interview?" So I wound up on Evening Magazine with Max the Crystal Skull. Incredible adventure, incredible adventure. I really believe it had healing qualities because
I
had
so
health
too.
Issues at the time. I felt tremendously better after, and I had a really interesting experience when I sat with the skull by myself. I was looking at it. I was fascinated by it because it's so amazing. It's just, you can't until you experience it.
Well,
eye socket, a face formed.
Really?
Yeah, and about 5 years later, I actually found the person the face belonged to, who turned out to be a specialist, a doctor that had to do with intestinal issues. And it's interesting, I found out later that at the time I was with a skull, I had an intestinal, I had caught in Giardia from Egypt.
Huh.
So it was a very spooky synchronicity thing. So I'm fascinated about that. So it was
I
wonderful to see it in your book.
Well, I have an adjunct that I found out after my book was published. An old high school chum called me and said, by the way, my mother was Anna Mitchell Hedges' best friend.
Oh, my God.
And wait till you hear this. Here's
one degree of separation.
Exactly. And he lives a block away from the house. His wife had just read my book. And he explained that Anna Mitchell Hedges kept this magnificent artifact in a bowling ball bag under her bed. And she would bring it out and show anybody.
Oh, my God, I love it.
Well, here's more to the story, though. So then the officials in Belize, where it was found, got wind of where it was and came up to London, Ontario, and tried to persuade Anna Mitchell Hedges to bequeath it to Belize, where it was found. And they were just a little bit obnoxious, and she just said nothing doing. And after they left, she picked up her bowling ball bag and went to England and bequeathed it. And I think it's in the British Museum now.
Fabulous, yeah. It's amazing.
Is that interesting?
Yeah, it is interesting, because the Maxa crystal skull, this lady inherited from a Red Hat Lama and kept it in her closet in a shoebox.
Oh,
and
nice.
It drove her crazy because it would talk. She would hear it talk,
and
she would just like, you know, say, shut up, don't do that, you know.
Yeah.
And she was sitting one day watching some TV show, and there was another man talking about his crystal skull, which was rose quartz. And she called the radio studio and says, listen, I have one of those skulls in my closet. And they go, yeah, yeah. You know, she goes, no, seriously, I have one.
Oh.
I'll bring it down. And that's when she really found out what it was and started taking Max on tour and stuff. So it's fascinating
how these artifacts
go to people.
Did you feel when you were with it that it came from Atlantis?
I really felt like it was otherworldly. I think it was very much Atlantis, Lemurian. I think they've been around a lot longer than we'll ever know.
Interesting. Do you think the 26,000 years would be untoward? I mean, could it be?
I think they're much older than that.
Oh, isn't that interesting?
Yeah, I think they're much older than that. And my sense from just the vision that there are 12 of these.
Yes, there are. I think I heard 12 or 13, yeah.
Eventually there will be 12 of them come together, and there will be a 13th that will activate them all. And that's
why
you feel they're computer chips, yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah, and I have no documentation. That's just from the vision that I had, and I don't think I'll ever forget the vision. Because, I mean, Egypt, if you showed me scarab, anything else, I mean, I would have thought, yeah, okay. But to see crystal skull in Egypt, you're going like, yeah, this doesn't make any sense.
Yeah.
You know, so there you go. You never know. But, I mean, what an interesting way to get me to the whole journey of those things. That was
absolutely. Adventure. Well, I have been blessed with people saying, why don't you do this or why don't you do that? It's not that I'm that I hold back. It's just that I hadn't heard about such and such. And I have been guided by just the offhand suggestions, like to go to that Crystal Skull seminar. There was nothing in our newspaper about it at all. It was wonderful to get there.
I really feel as you become open to your spiritual path, that synchronicity take over, and it becomes synchro-destiny.
I hope so, and I hope that happens with my next
publisher. Your book is so really wonderful. I love it because it really talks about the journey and so many things. I want to talk a minute about, you know, your experience with mediums, because being a reader, a clairvoyant, and a medium, I consider myself a medium, not necessarily the ones that only talk to the dead, but I really think that, you know, mediumship in America in particular is very misunderstood. I think it's much more understood perhaps in England, and where it has an incredible ancient history. I think if you go back to the East Coast and Maine, New York, Pennsylvania, those things, they have a little bit more understanding because it's been around there. It started in modern spiritualism started in Highville, New York.
Yeah.
So I think they have a little more understanding. But when you get to this coast, it's a little like, huh?
Yeah, and I don't want to keep picking on, but the Christian right has really tried to suppress the knowledge that comes from mediums, because it will screw up the creeds and dogmas. That's why reincarnation and Christianity will never meet, because reincarnation teaches that we alone are responsible for our salvation.
Takes out the middleman.
Yeah, and we can't just dump all your troubles and your sins in Jesus' lap and then walk away.
Right.
So you can see never the twain will meet. something's going to happen, though. What I've started to say about this, the Da Vinci Code was a neat thing, apart from the fact it sold 40 million copies, which means probably 80 million people have read it.
And made them question. Yay.
Yes, and there will be a ton of other books along the same line.
Absolutely.
That's what.
And I think they're going to make it in a movie, too, once that movie
hits. Oh, they are. It's coming
really,
out in May.
Really going to affect people. It's just like what the thing, what the bleep. If
that's
you haven't
right.
seen that, it's really fabulous. Because you had quantum physics scientists talking about stuff that spiritual woo-woo people have talked about forever.
Yeah.
No,
well, my first publisher had her PhD in quantum physics, and she said that all people in quantum physics believe in reincarnation because they know that the mind is pure energy and it can't be destroyed. Mm-hmm. I thought that was interesting coming from Western science.
It's wonderful.
Which tends to be, you know, tends to focus on the five senses rather than six.
So how would you help mediums? How would you help it become more mainstream for people?
Oh, here's what my plan. I'm glad you asked that question, Atira. First of all, we need to have gathering places for young people. And hopefully, I've been told actually by mediums, and I may be part of this in maybe London, Ontario, get people together, teach them in an informal way, and have a build up a library of used books so that they can start to read and they can come and talk about it. Secondly,
Where it will be normal.
Yes, exactly. For instance, I have really good crowds. I give lectures here in London, and you'd be surprised at the crowds that come. And but the other thing is, we must start in, even in public schools now with all these indigo children coming around. We must just start the basics of just introducing the basic concept of reincarnation, which you can teach in 5 minutes, really. Just to get them used to the thought and to help them help it refine children's behavior by understanding that, you know, the universe will settle the score. But then get going in high school and college, teaching all the basic tools for self-understanding, just the basics of astrology, palmistry, and all the rest, and mediums and reincarnation. And then, and what I would like to see is every university. Just as the University Athens taught, it was the last bastion of reincarnational teaching before Christianity closed them all. But we need to have universities teaching metaphysical science. You can't teach physical science without teaching metaphysical science, but here's where it can help mediums. If you have a two- or three-year course, the first year is basics. The second year is developing the skills of mediums, and they've got built-in test subjects. And then you can build up a register where everybody is better at something than they are at something else. Some mediums are really good at finding criminals or lost.
Right. That's one thing I think that's not talked enough about, Pamela, and that is that a medium, that's like the overall name of like an MD, and then you specialize.
Yes.
You know,
exactly.
Some mediums are great talking to passed over loved ones. Some talk to angels. Some talk to,
that's right.
You know, find
that's
lost
exactly
children.
That's exactly what I mean. Yep.
I mean, there's a specialty there.
When the police have got a problem and they need something quickly, they know to go to the university and say, hire three mediums.
Who's in your field, right.
Yep. And also, what they can help with are psychiatrists, for instance, who cannot get to the root of a person's emotional problem. Go to the university. Find out which mediums are good in that area to diagnose, you know, what the basic problem is. Similarly,
and
with
medical
physical.
Medical intuitive.
Yeah. Exactly. And then teach those. It's like going to the Juilliard School of Music. Only good singers go and develop. Be the same thing at this university level. So people would have to have, you know, a fair. They'd have to be tested before they're accepted, and then tested and categorized later.
Well, that's one thing I think Dr. Gary Swartz at the University of Arizona, that it's really made quantum leaps for us in that research, because he has researched John Edward.
Right.
So many people that are, you know, known mediums, that it's just exciting that his book is, to me, one of the great books, his new book out, Medium, and it talks about the one that's on the feature of the show, The Medium, and I cannot think of her name right this minute.
I know,
apologize.
Yes. Yep. And no, I've read his first book. I haven't read the second one yet.
But also, James Van Praagh wrote a book for teenagers on medium on psychic and mediumship information. Fabulous book. And also, Ted Andrews, who has been around for a long, long time, he wrote a book on spirits, ghosts, and guardians for children's Young People Guide to Magic and Mysteries. And I loved it because it made it so non-threatening. It took all the fear stuff and just put basic, you know, normal stuff that it's normal to see things. It's normal to sense and feel. It was fabulous.
That's wonderful. Now, actually, I was going to just talk about with you. I explained to people that the reason there's such a shortage of good mediums now is because for a 1,500-year period, over a quarter of a million of them were murdered. And although it's not a genetic skill, it's a soul skill, nevertheless, mediums, to the best of my knowledge, are born into families or subsequent families because a young child who really is a good medium needs to have a family member or a close friend to help them understand what's going on.
I think that's true. I know that in my household, my dad was part Native American, my mother was Southern Baptist. So, you know, the first thing that when I started displaying these things, she wanted to take me, get me fixed.
Yeah.
Church, bless her heart, because she was afraid, you know?
Sure.
And it isn't socially acceptable. You know, my mother's biggest fear was always that someone in my, you know, something would be said in school and they would take me to the shrink, you know?
Yeah.
And I think those fears are probably here still today, but, you know, not as big. You know, they're not going to shoot steak and burn us today, but they might give us drugs and give us a padded cell.
Right.
Even now, I don't think so. With Doreen Virtue, you know, who used to
be
a psychiatrist and do lockdown. If you talked about spirits or apparitions or God, visions of angels and God, she would, like, give you nice drugs and lock you up, and now she's teaching it. So I think there's tremendous breakthroughs in our
I think so,
period.
Too, but I do think we have to get in there and fight a little more. I mean, you need a loudmouth like me.
Well, I think we all have to show up. I think it's time
for
everyone.
I need to be backed up by the experts like you.
Well, I don't know that I'm an expert, but I think that it's time for everybody who has questions and doubts to ask the right questions, to be open to asking questions, and not to condemn somebody that knows something different than you.
That's right.
I mean, you know, I don't have a PhD, and I would never think to criticize someone who does. I would think, oh, man, they did some extra studies and time. I might want to look up and ask questions. I think everybody has come here with a gift to give, and everybody, you know, needs to share.
That's right.
The more we share, less.
That's right, and we're all at different levels of understanding. People born in Botswana, for instance, are here strictly for these.
Oh, thank God for him. Isn't he wonderful?
Who?
I think he's a senator. I think he's a governor. I think his name is something Botswana. And I think he is going to be one of the people that changes the face of America.
Oh, actually, I guess we're talking about two different things.
Sorry.
Well, people always say to me, if you choose your life, why would you choose to be born in Africa?
Oh, yeah.
And I explain that infant souls, when they first come to Earth, need to learn survival. And so they live around the equator, and they have to learn to survive these horrible plagues and tsunamis and all that
stuff. Well, I also think, Pam, though, if God couldn't come and he sent you, wouldn't you make a difference? You know, Daniel Brinkley always says that, and it's true. I think sometimes advanced souls show up in those places to try and help them evolve.
Oh, yeah. What I was getting at is that I'm talking about, there was a book called Messages to Michael. I don't know if you've ever read that.
I've heard
and then there's another book called The Michael Handbook, and it's clear, just very simply, just to give you an understanding, the different kinds of behavior, which is based on whether a person's an infant soul or a young soul or a mature soul, like Albert Schweitzer, who made great humanitarian contributions. And then there are old souls who are always teachers. It's just that if you understand that you may be in a room with five grades in it, say, you don't sneer at a person in grade three when you're in grade five.
Sorry about that. You have another question. You're beginning to hear you.
Okay.
Sorry about that.
Did I? Are you
we
there?
Went over. That's okay. I just gotta say, thank you so much for being my guest, and we'll have you back if we have more to talk about.
Well, thanks. There's
thank
lots
you
more
so
where that
Kim.
Came from, Matira, and
okay.
I'm. It was my pleasure.
Lots of blessings. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
And until we meet again, keep your heart light shining bright to light your way and your path for others. Blessings. Bye.
You have been listening to BBS Radio, a blogandservice.com production and a service to others endeavor. Thank you very much for tuning into our radio program, and we wish you much peace and joy on your journey.